Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Boquist, Minnis, Thatcher. Excuse for business of the House, Roblin.
The flag salute will be led by Representative Mike Schaffler.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. The opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Jeff Collins of Corvallis. He is reading a poem of his own entitled, Don't Hold Me Back. There is a copy of it on your desk, and you should feel free to read along if you would so like. He is sponsored by Representative Sarah Gelser.
Okay, the poem is by, actually, Don't Hold Me Back by Nikki Giovanni. And when I dream in color. Even rainy days sparkle. Even clouds have shine. And when I hope, I hope. And smiles, even laughter has bubbles. Even giggles, ballet. And so I understand that life is precious and important and wonderful when things go wrong, when things go back, when things don't work, I start to dream.
Jeff, thank you very, very much for reading your poem. Yeah. Welcome and thank you. Courtesies, Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our opening ceremony provider today was Jeff Collins, and the poem that he read was actually written by Nikki Giovanni. Jeff attended public schools in Corvallis, Oregon, where he continues to live in his own home. He has been employed as a groundskeeper at Trysting Tree Golf Club for 7.5 years, and he has also been working at Burger King for the last 6 years. He enjoys volunteering for community projects with Kiwanis Club, and he's also a mentor at OSU Impact, which is a fitness and athletics and activity program for kids with disabilities, and he's actually been my son's mentor for the last couple of years. Don't Hold Me Back, the title of the poem Jeff read today, also describes his attitude towards learning and living. I hope you'll also join me in extending courtesies to some of Jeff's family members, Doug and Catherine Collins, who are in the side gallery, who are also very active in many activities in the Corvallis community. And I'm so glad to have the Collins family here today. Jeff, thanks for doing such a great job reading the poem.
It's good to have you with us. Further courtesies? Messages from the governor? We're going to pause and check and make sure we have a quorum present.
just...
I'll get going through these motions, and then why don't you take over right here, First Union Pastor Phillips.
Okay.
Thank you, colleagues. We do have a quorum. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform that he has approved and signed the following bills, House Bill 3532 and 2405.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform that the Senate has passed House Bills 2007, Senate Bills 5547, Senate Bill 73, and 100. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform that he has signed House Bill 5008, 5009, 5010, 5011, 5034, 5043, 5045, House Bill 2076, 2109, 2111, 2122, 2265, 2266, 2267, 2274, 2316, 2319, 2321, 2348, 2357, 2361, and 2444.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Bill 2412 be removed from the consent calendar and placed in its proper order on today's third reading calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in consideration of House Bills 3540 and 3546 be made special orders of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Friday, May 4th, 2007 calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Council stand at ease. This has been taken off the consent calendar already, so that is not there.
Okay. Yeah, he said there's something he needs to do. I don't know.
Okay, what is that? And then are we doing your bill that you're carrying
yes.
today? So you'll be back by then?
No. I'm not sure I'm going anywhere.
Oh, really? I thought that they needed you.
Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2726 be removed from the consent calendar and placed in its proper order of today's third reading calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 5050, Relief to the Financial Administration of the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5027, Relief to the Financial Administration of the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5029, Relief to the Financial Administration of Specified Boards, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5041, Relief to the Financial Administration of the Department of Revenue, Appropriate Money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3089, relating to use of professional title, titled by acupuncturists. House Bill 3303, related to island annexation. House Bill 3337, related to land use for urban growth boundary.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
House Bill 2261 relating to apprenticeships program modifies membership of the State Apprenticeship and Training Council. Oh.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2261A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Witt votes aye. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson off the floor. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. House Bill 2261A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill and a short summary.
House Bill 2913, relating to tribal courts and declaring an emergency, provides that domestic relations order contain a judgment of tribal court filed in circuit court as domestic relations order made pursuant to domestic relations laws of this state for purposes of an alienation provisions of Federal Employee Retirement Income Security Act.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2913A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nelson, off the floor. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2913A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill, the first bill.
House Bill 2168, relating to temporary sales license issued by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2168A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2168A, passed out of your Committee on Business and Labor unanimously. I'll give you a quick summary of the four things that this bill does. First of all, this bill deals with temporary sales licenses issued by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Temporary sales licenses allow for the sale of alcoholic beverages at events such as fundraisers and community events, which are typically held at locations that are not licensed by the OLCC. The measure does four things, which simplifies and streamlines the issuance of the temporary license. First, it standardizes the fee for temporary licenses from the current fee of $25 for each five-hour period that the event is licensed to a straight $50 per day fee, removing any potential for a processing delay because of a miscalculation. And it should also be noted that the average event currently is 8.5 hours, so most folks are having to apply for two $25 licenses for the average event, and this just standardizes that. Secondly, it allows license applicants who are not a nonprofit or governmental entity to establish alcohol-only areas or an event restricted to those who are 21 and over if the OLCC approves the applicant's plan for controlling minors' access to alcohol. And I'd like to emphasize that. That is if the OLCC approves the applicant's plan for controlling minors' access to alcohol. Current statute only allows these types of applicants to apply for a temporary sales license if the entire event area is appropriate for minors to attend during the entire duration of the event. Thirdly, it eliminates a confusion on which types of organizations can sell alcohol by a raffle. One statute allows any person with temporary sales to sell alcohol by a raffle, but another statute only allows a charitable nonprofit organization to sell wine by a raffle. This bill fixes the conflict between these two statutes by only allowing nonprofit charities the ability to raffle wine. And finally, this bill allows wine trade organizations to apply for a temporary sales license in order to provide tasting events that feature multiple wineries and to expand opportunities for promoting Oregon's wine industry. The bill had no opposition in committee and passed unanimously.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise to state a potential conflict of interest.
Representative Cameron declares a potential conflict of interest. Please state your conflict.
Two potential conflicts. I have a member of the family who is a licensed OLCC distributor for wine and beer. Second one is I'm a member of a limited liability company that may apply for these temporary permits.
Thank you, Representative. The conflict will be noted in the record. Further discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also have to declare a potential conflict of interest. My campaign has been a holder of a temporary license and has, on occasion, raffled off some alcoholic beverages.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Scott declares a potential conflict of interest. It will be noted in the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nelson, off the floor. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2168A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2324, relating to courts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2324A. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2324 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee, and it arose out of our work on a different bill. There's one that will be coming to the House floor dealing with the free speech rights of student journalists. What we learned in our consideration of that bill is that Oregon is in a particularly difficult position for resolving constitutional issues, and that is because of the way that our Supreme Court applies the doctrine of mootness. Under the mootness doctrine, if the issue of the particular case that's before the court is moot by the time it arrives at the court doesn't decide it. And that was a particular problem or obstacle to getting clarity in the area of student journalists' rights, because by the time a case would get to the Oregon Supreme Court, the particular student would have graduated. So the case was then moot and dismissed, so it cannot be resolved at that point. All other states follow an exception to the mootness doctrine, which is encapsulated with the phrase capable of repetition but evading review, meaning that if there are other citizens who will be similarly situated, even though the particular citizen who brought the case forward is no longer has the particular issue at stake, the court is obliged to resolve the case so that it can make law for other citizens. All other states follow this rule. Oregon stands alone in not applying this exception to the mootness doctrine. What House Bill 2324 would do is to enact that exception to the mootness doctrine so that we can get clarity in these issues that come before our highest court. It would give certainty to Oregonians who have cases that are otherwise being not being resolved. It would conserve judicial resources by not requiring multiple cases to be brought up to the court. It is supported by the Department of Justice, who recognizes the need for this improvement in the handling of our judicial process. I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2324.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I know that most of your constituents aren't out there asking for you to change the capable of repetition yet evading review doctrine. It probably just doesn't come up too often. However, they are probably asking you to make government more efficient. And that's what this bill will do. As I'm going to quote Chief Justice Rehnquist from the United States Supreme Court, who once wrote that this is a prudential method to avoid squandering of judicial resources. And that's what this will do. If there's a question that keeps coming up, we need the courts to decide that. It comes up not only in student cases, and the court will say the student graduated, we can't hear the case. It comes up in election law cases. If the election's already happened, the court says the question is moot. This is a good bill that will change that doctrine to make Oregon like the rest of the states and following federal law as well, so we can get some of these issues decided. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative McPherson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Off the floor. All members have voted. House Bill 2324A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2342, relating to giving false information to peace officer.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2342A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill. House Bill 2342 comes to you on an unanimous vote from your House Judiciary Committee. The bill makes it unlawful to give a false name if an individual is being arrested on a bench warrant for probable cause. Many of you probably thought it was illegal already to lie to an officer about your name or address if you're being arrested. However, as we found out in the course of our committee hearing, in some instances, giving a false name is unlawful, and other very similar circumstances, it is not. House Bill 2342 makes it clear that it is never lawful to give a false name to a police officer when one is being arrested. Under current law, it is unlawful to give a false name to a police officer if you are getting a ticket. It is also unlawful to give a false name if you are being arrested on an arrest or warrant. However, if you are being arrested on a bench warrant or because an officer has probable cause and you lie about your name, it is not unlawful. There is very little difference between an arrest warrant and a bench warrant. The former is used after law enforcement has probable cause to believe an individual has committed a crime, and the latter is issued by a judge if an individual has failed to adhere to the demand of the court. As we heard in committee, there is no reason for them to be viewed differently as it relates to giving a false name to an officer. House Bill 2342 simply aligns the law by making it unlawful in each of these instances to give a false name to an officer. On behalf of your House Judiciary Committee, I urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Kump, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger votes aye. All members have voted. House Bill 2342A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2401, related to public employee retirement.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2401B. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'm rising today to speak to the passage of House Bill 2401. This bill comes to you from the House Business and Labor Committee, where it's received a unanimous do-pass recommendation. And it has been on the floor before and was sent back to a committee, and I want to acknowledge and thank the good representative from Southern Oregon and the representative from Lake Oswego for pointing out something that we really needed to fix in this bill, and I believe we've taken care of it with the B and Gross version of 2401. House Bill 2401 allows 911 operators who are members of the public employee retirement system to retire after 25 years of credible service, regardless of age. Under this bill, the earliest retirement age for a dispatcher is 55, or the age at which 911 dispatcher acquires 25 years of credit with PERS. Currently, the retirement age for 911 operators is 58 years old with 30 years of service. If an operator retires before they are 58, he or she is forced to take a reduced monthly retirement benefit. There are an estimated 1,000 telecommunicators certified by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training at call centers throughout Oregon. Approximately two-thirds of these 911 operators are members of PERS. Being a 911 operator is a profession that requires extremely long and varied hours, extensive training of 1 year or more, and unlimited mental dexterity. Multitasking is part and parcel of the job, and the person must be able to deal with highly stressful and very emotional situations. As you can well imagine, we heard some tapes that we just really couldn't listen to. The amount of stress and the amount of high impacts to a person's emotions listening to some of these things is just unbelievable. Under these circumstances, few operators are able to meet the 30-year service requirement, and 58 is considered old in this profession. Less than 2% of all dispatchers in the Tri-County Portland metro area have retired with full PERS benefits in the past 10 years. Colleagues, by voting for this bill, you are giving these operators a chance to retire without being penalized for meeting a difficult standard. You are also helping centers to recruit and retain qualified operators by giving new and existing operators the assurance that they will not have to face burnout to avoid being penalized for retiring. Colleagues, I hope you will join me in voting aye on House Bill 2401 and really helping out these folks that do a tremendous service and seeing to our protection. Thank you very much, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The good representative from the Emerald Empire has pretty much said it all. I just want to rise in support of this bill. And as a volunteer who's gotten to know a lot of dispatchers over the years, because he's absolutely right, they don't last long. And when they do leave the profession, some of them take those really difficult calls with them for the rest of their lives and deal with nightmares and memories and things that most of us who actually perform the other part of the services, we have a small part of that. They are listening to all the calls that come day and night, and they do make a great sacrifice. And when it comes time to retire, he's absolutely right. Not very many of them retire with these full benefits. So this is a huge thing for them, a small gift that we can give them, and it's absolutely deserved because these are the people who are saving lives every day. Please vote yes.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
The fix that took place as a result of the prior discussion we had relating this bill, and I stand in opposition to the bill still because of the fact that it is one more chip and one more alteration and change in our PERS laws, and to remind the body that the problem that we had in 2003 was a result of 30 years of little adjustments here, little adjustments there that were meaningful for a small group, but they all compound and they all add. This bill basically says that this one group of state workers can retire after 25 years, which means that if they were to go to work at 20, at age 45, they could retire and start receiving their retirement benefits, which essentially become then deferred compensation because they're only 45, they go work someplace else. And the same thing, if they started at 25, they'd be 50. Retirement was intended to be retirement, to help fund the golden years. And when people don't want to work in a job any longer, they can change jobs. They have that flexibility, but there's a cost for retirement. And I would hope that we would resist the inclination that we have to do good piecemeal in a retirement plan when there's billions of dollars at stake and that we need to be consistent for everyone. So I would hope that we vote no on the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Well, first of all, Madam Speaker, these are special people doing a special job, and they should be treated specially. That being said, there is minimal fiscal impact. This is not a chip or a chunk or an addition or a deletion or an amendment. This is not going to, for what these people give to us, the minimal fiscal impact we're imposing on this fund is worth every penny of it. As to the golden years, look, I get paid $20 an hour. When I get that $20, it's mine. I work 30 years, 25 years, whatever my contract says. That's my pension. That's my benefit. That's my property. I can walk away with it, enjoy it, and in my golden years, if I want to go get a job and continue to receive that benefit, it's because I have earned it, and it's mine. Thank you very much. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion, Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
I rise in support of this bill. I had the opportunity to visit several 911 call centers, not only in Portland, which is Multnomah County, but in Hood River, and they do a tremendous amount of work. These people are the burnout and the mental anguish that they go through is incredible. It is hard to recruit people even to pass the training, so I'm very supportive of them. They do a tremendous job, so I just want to thank them all and hope you'll vote for it.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Yes. Yes. My question is, it's been brought up here that this may have some kind of a physical impact or maybe some additional cost to the PERS system. We discussed that very lengthy, of course, in the committee. Was there any additional cost to PERS and any physical impact to this bill?
There. Thank you, Madam Speaker, and good representative. There was some discussion about that in committee, and there is minimal fiscal impact. And in fact, in this B. N. Gross bill, the telecommunicators who retire before the age of 55 do not receive an annual cost of living adjustment until they attain the age of 55. So, actuarially, this became neutral.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this really is a choice issue. If you retire early, you retire at a reduced rate, you don't get cost of living adjustments until the time that you're really eligible to do your retirement at age 55, like the good representative outlined. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I had the opportunity, I guess it was an opportunity, when I was recovering from surgery one time and wasn't able to go back to full police duties. The doctor said I could go if I had a job that wouldn't put me in danger of being wrestled down. I'd had major back surgery. So I went to the chief and said, please give me a job, and I was assigned to the 911 center in Portland, which if I had known that, I would have said any job but radio. The dispatchers there are very hard-working people. In the big metropolitan area, sometimes they'll be handling many cars on keeping track like an aircraft controller. It's really quite a job. And I was just thinking as the testimony went on, I hadn't planned to speak today, I was working one night when a man in Portland decided to murder his family. He was shooting the mother, shooting the children, and one of the children got on the phone and was telling the operator, help, help. my father was killing people. And while she was talking on the phone, the operator, I'm getting chills just thinking, running this back through my mind, heard the dad come up and shoot the daughter while she was on the line with her. This operator will carry that call to her grave. These people really do burn out. It's a strenuous job. And I appreciate the representative from Southern Oregon wanting to be sure that we're not chipping away at PERS, and he's absolutely right about that. But this is a good bill, should pass.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, just real briefly, less than 2% of these dispatchers retire currently with full benefits. This is just a job that takes such fortitude. And, you know, I just can't imagine the emotional stress that these people go through and how they actually sleep at night sometimes. This, as I say, doesn't cost us anything to speak of. And I think it's the right thing to do. Let's give these people at least a little bit. Thank you very much, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Representative Tomei, are you on the floor? Off the floor. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2401B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative David Edwards, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Chair, I request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Edwards requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I'd appreciate if you'd direct your attention over to the side aisle. Noreen Lee is one of my constituents. She's also the assistant to Tom Bryan, Washington County Chairman, Board of Commissioners. She's worked with for Washington County for 27 years. She's from the Witch Hazel area of Hillsborough, and this is her first visit to the Capitol. So please make her welcome.
Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2412, relating to apprenticeship, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2412A. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move House Bill 2412 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Witt moves House Bill 2412 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill has a fiscal impact in terms of the grants that it provides to the Oregon Building Congress, and it also provides for student participants to have trips of at least a week, both of which have a significant fiscal impact and merit being referred to Ways and Means on that basis.
Further discussion? Representative Witt, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2412A should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye, and those opposed will say aye,
aye.
And those opposed, no. Motion carries, and House Bill 2412 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2585, related to education and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2585A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2585A is coming to you from your Education Committee. And colleagues, before I begin, I just want to make a couple of thank yous. I want to thank the good representative from Ashland for allowing me to use one of his bills as a kind of proverbial gut and stuff, if you wish. We had a an issue, or we have an issue in my district where the ESD does a lot of Umatilla-Morrow County ESD does a lot of work out in smaller communities, smaller counties, where the various professional and technical expertise that they need is not available, and where they would like to hire or contract with individuals who have that technical expertise in the education arena and to provide services that are critical that the local school districts in, you know, just for example, Morrow County, which is a relatively small county with relatively small schools and wouldn't be able to, you know, afford some of those services. And those services are available frequently by or in the area from people who have retired from education or perhaps even from some other professions and currently are so limited on what they can do, complements of the PERS, et cetera, statutes. So this bill simply enables my ESD to be able to continue to provide those services out in the hinterland where they would not otherwise, without these retired folks, be able to hire individuals to do this. The question was asked, and one of the issues that certainly want to address, and I appreciate Representative Barker bringing this to me. If you can do it there, why can't maybe we do it in the metro area? And the reason that we're asking for this is we simply don't have that supply of expertise in Gilliam or you know, some of these hugely heavily populated areas, if you count the population being ground squirrels and coyotes and things like that, and leave Homo sapiens out of the equation. So and we don't want to interfere, and it isn't the intention here to in essence interfere with the ability of people who are in the community and in the area that want to work at these jobs that are not retirees. We're simply looking at those places where the labor pool for these specialists simply is non-existent. And this is the only labor pool we kind of have to rely on. I really thank my colleagues and Senator Buckley, or Representative Buckley, for his, I'm sorry, Representative, I didn't mean the demotion here. I'm on this committee where I keep referring back and forth between representatives and senators, and sometimes in my old age I get confused. My apologies, please. For helping us move this along, it was certainly beneficial to Eastern Oregon. And colleagues, this is a good bill that will, what this will do is it will provide needed services to children in small schools out in the rural areas where otherwise they wouldn't have those services. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion? Representative Dellum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This bill, when my colleague talks about the opportunity to fill spaces, it enhances that opportunity, but filling slots will still be very difficult. We have one ESD that has advertised for a speech therapist for 3.5 years. We just can't entice people, particularly people that are in short supply, to various places in my district. These are not regular teachers. They are specialists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech therapists. Even in the metro area, they are difficult to come by, but they're impossible to come by in our area. I would ask for your support on behalf of the other side of the mountains. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
Again, Madam Speaker, simply to thank the members in the body for this, and to emphasize I appreciate Representative Dahlem's comments, but this really isn't for the other side of the mountain. This is for the kids.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gerard, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2585A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2617, relating to food establishments.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2617A. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'm really excited about bringing this bill forward to the floor. This is a good bill for farmers. And before the good representative from the Sandy Yam Valley and their good representative from Oregon's Christmas Tree District start combing through the bill looking for the words field burning, trust me, they're not in this bill. This bill is something I'm really proud to have worked on. I've been working on it since last summer. It was brought to me and to this House really indirectly from an organic pig farmer in my district, and he gave me a call last summer and had some problems, I guess, in trying to promote his own business. And due to some regulations that we looked into and talked to the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and they acknowledged that this was kind of a barrier for small business. So this bill just started out basically trying to help this particular individual. Under current law, only one business can be licensed at a physical location when they go to package their products, and specifically this was about meat packing. And this individual, or any farmer under this bill now that raises products or bakeries, it's been expanded somewhat to its original intent. Basically, this bill is going to allow that small individual to go into a licensed facility and get a license themselves and be able to market their own product. House Bill 2617 helps small businesses in Oregon bring their products to market and promote their own business using their own label. This bill allows the Department of Agriculture to license a primary operator and additional users of custom slaughtering establishments, meat sellers, slaughterhouses, milk processors, manufacturers of dairy products, bakeries, and food establishments. Just darn near anything that's licensed under the Department of Agriculture, this bill is going to help those folks that have those licenses market their own products. Not much fanfare about this bill, and I'm probably not known for bringing bills that have no controversy or bills that everybody can vote on and feel good about, but I think this is one of those bills. Frankly, I'm just really happy to help out a farmer in my district and potentially farmers across this state get into the market and have the opportunity to grow and market their own products and someday become big farmers instead of small farmers, if they so choose. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm very much acquainted with the small farmer that the good representative from the Emerald Empire refers to. I purchase bacon from him most Saturday mornings at the Eugene Farmers Market, and I really enjoy the work he does. This is one of those glitches in our law that we currently have that makes it difficult for very small producers to work, to stay in business and to work. While he found a workaround, there are many other businesses that have not been able to. I'm very pleased to hear that the good representative from the Emerald Empire has been able to expand this bill to include other small businesses. Well, one of the problems I'm aware of when people are considering going into very small production baking, for example, is the requirement that you have a separate kitchen, separate from your kitchen at home. Being able to license from a commercial kitchen would make that work possible. When it is not currently. As Oregon moves in the direction of bringing more food production home to locally into areas closer to where people will actually consume it, this change in our law will become more and more important. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I want to thank my colleague from the Emerald Empire for a couple of things. One is relieving me of combing through, which is exactly what I was doing. The second is for sticking up for farmers, many of whom I represent in my district. And the third is for a compelling speech. And unlike his comment to me in committee recently after I gave a very passionate speech when he said, "Interesting." I say good speech, and you have my vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Madam Speaker, I just wanted to thank Mr. Cooper from Sweetbriar Farms for being involved and passionate about his business and about the industry and bringing this to my attention. And I also want to thank Ron McKay with the Department of Agriculture, who really got excited about this bill and started looking at all their statutes saying, man, we could really do some great things. And I mean, we worked quite a bit back and forth with LC, and they deserve some credit in helping me out with this as well and making this really a good bill for the state of Oregon. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? votes aye. Representative Schaffler votes aye. Representative Girard? How do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nathanson votes aye. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Votes aye. And all members have voted. House Bill 2617A, having received the required the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2640 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on the Monday, May 7, 2007 calendar. The carrier is excused. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2674, related to deduction from wages.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2674A. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move House Bill 2674 be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Representative Witt moves that House Bill 2674 be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The bill does not address clearly one particular permutation of payroll deductions that was just discovered by the good representative from Almsville.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Witt, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2674 should be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules will say aye, and those opposed, no. The motion having received the required majority is declared adopted. House Bill 2674 is referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2726 relating to state-funded research that benefits private enterprise.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2726. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2776A is good for small business, and it passed out of your Consumer Protection Committee with a due pass recommendation. Did I get the number wrong?
Colleagues, I just wanted to clarify that the bill we are on is House Bill 2776. It is 2726. And looks like the third reading list said 76, but it's 2726.
My apologies.
Representative Shields, please go ahead. Oh, yeah. And, colleagues, this is the bill that was removed from the consent calendar and put on its proper place on today's calendar, just to clarify how we got here.
Okay, so it was placed here. Oh, gosh. That's what happens when you introduce bills that have similar numbers, I guess.
Representative Shields to House Bill 2726.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2726, we pulled it from the consent calendar because I just wanted to get a couple of comments on the record about the intent of this bill. Over the next 10 years, we're going to be sponsoring some very good research that will benefit private enterprise. And one of my favorites along those lines is the Manufacturing 21 Coalition. And I had, when I was at a presentation with the Portland Development Commission, one of my constituents, a small business in my district, small parts manufacturing, the human resources person said, well, it's great that we're going to be investing in all this manufacturing research, but shouldn't we try to ensure that the research that we do actually benefits job creation in Oregon? as opposed to, say, improving manufacturing processes in the global economy or perhaps in China. So I just wanted to put on the record, and I think this reflects the committee's view as well, that the intention of this bill is to encourage creation of jobs in Oregon in those instances where state dollars used for research benefit private enterprise. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Brune, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2726A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2776, relating to election by certain business enterprises not to obtain public works bond.
House Bill 2776A, the question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2776A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, let's try this again. House Bill 2776A is good for small business, and it passed out of your Consumer Protection Committee unanimously. This bill improves upon Senate Bill 477B from last session, which was the prevailing wage bill. And in that prevailing wage bill, there was a requirement that on public works projects, contractors would be required to have a bond of $30,000 to make sure the workers were paid. And within that bill also was an exemption for minority, women-owned, and emerging small businesses and disadvantaged businesses for 1 year. Now, I think a lot of us, when we read that, assumed that the exemption was from 1 year from the date of the enactment of the bill. But when you look at the fine print of the bill, which the bill was about an inch and a half thick, you find that actually the exemption was from the date that a small business was certified as a minority, women-owned, and emerging small business by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. So the end result was that that exemption was really not helping a whole lot of people, because it's often 3-4 years after you get certified before you would get your first public works project that would require prevailing wage. So what this bill simply does as a compromise solution with the A and Gross version is expand that exemption from 1 year to 4 years. And then also at the request of the Associated General Contractors to make it a little bit easier on all small businesses, they're also exempted for prevailing wage public works projects, the subcontractor and the contractor, when the total project is under $100,000. This bill is good for small business. Again, it has the unanimous support of your Consumer Protection Committee, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Olson, votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2776A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2832, relating to exposure to depleted uranium and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2832A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Before I begin, colleagues, I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that the third reading alert list on page 3 of 7, House Bill 2832, in the third reading alert list, it's incorrect. They're talking about the different bills. So if you want to find out what this bill is about, I would suggest you open your bill file and follow along with me. And I appreciate Representative Richardson for bringing that to our attention and allowing us to move forward with the bill. Colleagues, House Bill 2832A is about protecting the health of the veterans of the first Gulf War, as well as about protecting the health of veterans and servicemen and women who are returning from Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. And I'm pleased to report it comes to you from your Veterans Affairs Committee, where it passed unanimously. Depleted uranium is the byproduct of the uranium enrichment process, and depleted uranium contains about 50% of the radioactivity of natural uranium. It is used in munitions designed to pierce heavy armor. Now, the first Gulf War was the first time these munitions were used, but radioactivity from depleted uranium has been found in Bosnia after the 1995 bombings, and these munitions are still used today. There is a growing body of evidence that exposure to depleted uranium is a radiation risk if internalized through shrapnel, contaminated wounds, ingestion, or inhalation. According to a 2004 study in the journal Health Physics, the compound has remained present in the urine of Gulf War veterans for years after the initial exposure. Soldiers who have served around depleted uranium have suffered increased health problems normally associated with exposure to radioactive materials, and exposure to depleted uranium has been potentially linked to lung and kidney damage, cancer, and genetic mutations. Finally, some research suggests that our troops' exposure to depleted uranium may be associated with the mysterious illness Gulf War Syndrome, which is still unexplained to this day and plagues hundreds of thousands of Gulf War I veterans. House Bill 2832A does two things. One, it directs the Director of Veterans Affairs to assist veterans of military service in obtaining screenings and treatment for exposure to depleted uranium. Second, it creates a task force to study the effects of depleted uranium and Gulf War Syndrome. And colleagues, I'm pleased to report that Director Willis of the Department of Veterans Affairs has taken a keen interest in this bill and supports it wholeheartedly, in part because he wants to make sure that what happened with Agent Orange in the past doesn't happen with depleted uranium or Gulf War Syndrome in the present and in the future. The bill also has the support of General Reese in the Oregon Military Department. Now, in working with Director Willis on this bill, he suggested that we broaden the scope of the task force on exposure to depleted uranium to include its possible connection to Gulf War Syndrome, which would also allow the task force to look at Gulf War Syndrome more broadly. This expansion of scope would allow the task force to rightly look at other potential causes of Gulf War Syndrome, like exposure to smoke from burning Gulf War oil fields. This broadened scope, which is reflected in the A. and Gross version of the bill, is important, and also in the A. and Gross version is a modification of the task force makeup. Madam Speaker, I also want to acknowledge the work of Representative Buckley on this matter. He did much of the research. I thank Director Willis for his hard work on the bill, and I thank the Chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee and all of its members for passing this out of committee unanimously with a due pass recommendation. This is an important bill to help us advocate for the health of our veterans, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill, please.
To the bill?
I do sit on the Committee on Veterans Affairs, and I strongly urge your aye vote. We have to do everything within our power to make sure we protect the health and welfare of the men and women to defend this great country. But the real reason I stood up is we're fortunate enough to have men that serve right here in this body, and he's not here, our friend from the 23rd District, and he explained this to me in great detail, and I wish he were here today, but when he does come back, I urge you all to go around and ask him about it, and he's rather cavalier about it all, but I think every 3 years he gets tested himself for this, and he's used these munitions in situations that I certainly hope and pray to God I never have to be in, but I just hope you all recognize that. I know you do. I'm just reminding us. It's a great bill. I urge your vote. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just rise in support of HB 2832. I served a few years ago as the chair of a National Academy of Science Committee on post-deployment health effects, and there seems to be no question, although we haven't exactly tied it to all the other diseases, that the depleted uranium that's used in, particularly in the tank shells, is the most common use of it to harden the projectile itself, clearly has health effects. Exactly what those health effects are and how they work isn't clear, and I think this task force would be extremely useful and will find lots of help in its task from work that's going on around the country trying to look at this same issue. So I urge you to join in support of this bill. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Shields, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Off the floor. Voted aye. House Bill 2832A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2871, relating to consumer loans and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2871A. Representative Merkley.
Madam Speaker and colleagues, in 1981, the Oregon Legislature opened a Pandora's box of predatory lending when it eliminated all limits on interest rates for consumer loans. And now is the time to close that box. At the time the limits were lifted, proponents argued that market competition would keep interest rates in check and protect consumers. In fact, that was the wish of everyone, but rarely has an argument been proved more wrong. National payday and car title lenders charging rates of 200, 300, even 500% invaded Oregon, outnumbering McDonald's restaurants, outnumbering Starbucks. On a two-mile stretch of Lancaster here, just a short distance from where we stand at this moment, there are 19 payday loan shops on a two-mile stretch of Lancaster. One even has a drive-up window. What is the result? Oregonians with short-term financial needs are swept into a vortex of debt from which they can often not escape. Oregonians are learning the hard way what societies have learned over thousands of years: predatory loan practices do enormous damage to our families, and they do enormous damage to our communities. And that is why the tide is turning against such lending practices across this country. In state after state, caps are being restored. Indeed, Oregon remains one of only 16 states without such a limit. Now you might ask, and reasonably so, didn't we already address this? Didn't we already establish a cap on interest rates? Last year in special session, we adopted House Bill 1105. It placed a 36% cap on payday loans of less than 60 days. I want to emphasize the less than 60 days. Earlier this session, we passed House Bill 2204, and it placed a 36% cap on title loans, again, of less than 60 days. The bill before you completes the worthy work begun by those earlier bills by placing a 36% cap on consumer loans of more than 60 days. This bill does not end consumer lending. Indeed, consumer lending thrives in the 34 states with interest rate caps. But it will end the predatory triple-digit interest rates that are destroying Oregon's families and undermining our communities. This is very well worth doing, and I urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and colleagues. I rise today in support of this bill, and as chair of the Consumer Protection Committee, I'm proud to say that our committee has done some great work this session to stand up for consumers in a way that has long been needed in Oregon. The protections contained in House Bill 2871 are a real win for Oregon consumers, that's for sure. But most telling about the way the legislature is being run this session is that we are able to craft the legislation with the help of good actors in the consumer loan industry, and that we now have a product that is satisfactory to all of us. In reality, the point of this legislation is to close the loopholes that would allow predatory payday lenders to skirt any of the previous legislation we have approved this session. Our friends at the United Finance Company, whose letter of endorsement you have on your desk, recognize that they were not the intended targets of the legislation and helped us make the appropriate changes to make sure their industry could still survive and thrive in the state of Oregon. Included in those changes in House Bill 2871, it adds definitions for brokers or facilitators and consumer loan to ORS Chapter 725. It prohibits making or acting as an agent, broker, or facilitator for a person making a consumer loan of $50,000 or less without first obtaining a license, and specifies those persons that do not collect fees or considerations are not required to be licensed. It sets a maximum interest rate of 36% per annum for conventional non-short-term and open-end conventional consumer loans of less than $50,000 made by licensees subject to ORS Chapter 725. It also allows conventional lenders to also receive other reasonable and bona fide fees, expenses, or damages, like prepayment and late fees, in addition to the finance charge. House Bill 2871 also limits payday and title lenders to a 36% annum interest rate, but allows them to charge only one origination fee, the lesser of $10 per $100 or up to $30. It imposes restrictions on title lenders similar to the restrictions in Senate Bill 1105 of the 2006 special session, including a minimum 31-day term, maximum of two renewals, and no more than a $20 fee for all dishonored checks. It also permits consumer finance licensees to recover costs associated with the collection of defaulted loans, consistent with House Bill 2203A, which we have previously passed this session. It revises and combines the director's rulemaking authority in ORS Chapter 183 to specify purposes for consumer protection and all licensee clarity, extending authority to establish loan form terms, charges, and fees for consumer loans. This bill contains an emergency clause making the Act and all amendments applicable to loans made or renewed on or after July 1, 2007. As colleagues, there is one other reason that is slightly more personal that leads me to support this bill. As many of you know, my son returned from a tour of duty in Iraq, and he's doing well, and he's readjusting. Last week, he just got married in Las Vegas. He's got a new bride that will be being deployed to Iraq soon. And Las Vegas is no place for a poor boy like him. Many of our military men and women, and frankly a lot of starting families in Oregon, find themselves not making the best choices with their money, and they need to sometimes look for loans. And this population really has a tough time meeting their obligations under these predatory lending practices. As consequences, the U.S. Congress last year passed a law that caps payday loans at 36% for all active duty military men and women and their spouses. This was a U.S. Congress controlled by a very pro-business majority, but they saw the stress and financial trouble that the triple-digit interest rates were causing among our bravest Americans, and they put an end to it.
Representative Riley yields.
Thank you, Representative. Our troops deserve nothing but support and respect, but so do other Oregonians as well. We have a responsibility to make sure that they are treated fairly, and this bill takes one step closer to that. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2871. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the time is ripe for a renewed conversation about the protections we want and expect when financial difficulties happen to us. From my work on the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, I know there were 850,000 Oregonians who ate from an emergency food box last year. I know that financial difficulties for these Oregonians came in the form of a pink slip from an employer, a flat tire on their only transportation to work, a medical emergency with no health insurance to cover it, or a mountain of debt brought on by a predatory loan. For too many of our neighbors, each day is a struggle to simply stay ahead. And we know that far too many people in Oregon aren't out chasing the American dream. Instead, they're working hard, but for a variety of reasons, do not have enough left in their paychecks to cover all their expenses. Frequently, this is when a payday lender or car title lender steps into the picture. Many Oregonians know firsthand the experience of borrowing from one of these lenders, and they know firsthand the devastating consequences of being unable to escape the debt these loans bring. We can change the situation for many of our neighbors by ensuring that there is a basic level of economic fairness in loan transactions. At the heart of this issue is the idea that all consumers deserve access to fair, responsible, and affordable credit. Rather than help borrowers meet their financial challenges, however, these short-term, high-cost loans trap borrowers in a spiral of debt that puts them in a worse financial situation. I do not accept the argument that these lenders are providing a service for Oregonians in need. It is not a service to charge triple-digit interest rates and call it affordable lending. It is not a service to build a business model that depends on repeat borrowing. And it is not a service to clog our court system with thousands of lawsuits every year against borrowers. By voting yes on House Bill 2871, we will be strengthening protections for borrowers, and we will help close the loopholes that allow lenders to avoid existing regulations. In the time that I've been working on this issue, colleagues, I have been most impressed with the Oregonians who have stepped forward to share their stories. One such person is Ruby Stoker. She lives in Florence, Oregon. She and her husband took out their first payday loan after losing their food stamps and ultimately came very close to losing their house as one loan turned into another and then another. They asked the lender for a payment plan, but they were told no. Ruby was brave enough to share her experiences with the House Interim Subcommittee on Payday Lending and spoke of the terrible financial burden and devastating emotional impact the payday loans have had on her family. Colleagues, I've been working on this issue for 6 years, and I ask you today to help people like Ms. Stokes. Let's help Oregonians who take out short-term loans by ensuring that all consumer loans have an interest rate cap of 36%. This is a reasonable standard for fair and affordable lending, and I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2871. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2871A. The fact that we are once again forced to have this debate speaks volumes about the need for this legislation. Though I am a new member of this legislature and I wasn't around for the floor debate, I remember well the content of the discussion that took place last April during the special session of the legislature. Many of the arguments heard that day were similar to the ones we are hearing now and have heard in committee. But while the rhetoric doesn't change, the situation affecting borrowers does, and it gets more dire, and that's why we have to act. Even more vivid in my mind than the debate on this issue, though, is the political posturing on the anti-reform side. Newspaper articles simultaneously full of lobbyists lamenting the inevitable death of the payday loan industry, as well as threats to exploit state regulations to keep up the predatory lending practices. Even the enforcement date of that bill bears the mark of an industry in denial about the trouble it causes for Oregonians. How else can we explain the fact that a bill that was passed more than a year ago doesn't even go into effect for another 2 months from now? It seems that the legislature's efforts to take a measured and precise approach to solving the problems created by the payday loan industry have been met with a thumb in the eye. In other states, the industry has devised new and ever more creative methods of going around the laws to take advantage of families in dire financial straits. Based on their own threats, we have no reason to believe that things would be any different in Oregon if we don't address these problems now. Colleagues, this comes down to two simple questions. First, do you believe that there are loopholes in our previously passed legislation that will allow payday lenders to continue to charge exorbitant interest rates? And second, do you believe those loopholes should be closed? My answer to both of those questions is an unequivocal yes. That bill, though many didn't know it at the time, left the door wide open to payday lenders who could make a few minor adjustments to their loan agreements, like lengthening the term or adjusting the repayment schedule, and they will magically fall outside of the scope of the legislation. Now, knowing how honorable my colleagues are, I cannot imagine that was the intended consequence of that bill. Colleagues, there are certainly two very legitimate sides to this debate. One school of thought argues vociferously for the reign of the free market above any other consideration. That is a legitimate policy position, and I appreciate those who make that argument. Others, like me, embrace the free market, but recognize that consumers deserve some measure of protection as well, if we as a society are to advance and thrive. In either case, this vote isn't about a politically expedient position. It is about doing what's right for Oregonians. I think doing right means giving them protection from predatory lenders so their families can thrive. I urge you to join me in voting aye on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
A few days ago, we talked about bird hunting, and my friend from East and West Salem talked about what a poor shot he was when he was growing up. I also enjoyed bird hunting, and I was not a very good shot. And there's a saying that comes from bird hunting: oftentimes you aim at a rooster and you hit a hen. And this case is exactly that euphemism applies to be true. Now, we dealt with, in House Bill 2202, 2203, 2204, and 2205, with predatory lending. This bill deals with consumer lending. There was not one documented case of any abuse within the consumer lending institutions. Not one. The premise is that the payday lenders and the title lenders are going to go into this market, but there's still not been a documented case of a problem in this market. So why are we regulating it? Because of a premise that they might go there. I just don't think that's enough or a valid reason to regulate a market that we do not need to go into. Now, there's some question about the 36%. First of all, there's no documented cases of them charging over 36%. Their concerns and the concerns of the financial institution is if the prime goes up to like 15 or 20%, it would throw a lot of them out of the market. And who are they going to throw out? They're going to throw out the high-risk automobile loans. I mean, those are going to be the first ones to fall. And so what you're taking out of the market is the poor people that can't really afford cars in a high inflationary market that would need to have the regulation, should this pass, would have to be rescinded. So my point is this bill is totally unnecessary given that 2202, 2203, 2204, and 2205 has passed. It's an institution that has not had a problem, and I think they find it fairly offensive that we're going into this market and trying to regulate them. I'd encourage a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise in opposition to this bill, and as I did in committee, once again risking being the hero for that paragon of economic recovery and economic development, predatory lenders. But I have to speak to this bill because we have, as my good friend from District 17 suggested, we've addressed this three times already in our committee, and now we address it again. I do not in any way doubt the motivation or the intention or the compassion of the speaker or another compelling speaker, the representative from Northeast Portland. What bothers me is that we continue to hammer at this issue from the top and not the bottom, that somehow this cap and this regulation of predatory lenders will solve the problem, which is what the representative from Northeast Portland talked about. The problem are poor people who have been preyed on, poor people who have no education, poor people who have no connection to credit or to a financial institution. So today, if nothing else, I just simply want to remind us that this will not solve the problem. The problem will be solved when we start reaching out to individual families that the representative from Northeast Portland described. One of the things that disappointed me in testimony, and I'm not sure if it was just on this bill or on the package of bills that we've seen, is that members of the nonprofit community, members of the religious community, members of the so-called consumer advocate community that came, never once talked about, I shouldn't say that, I misspoke, often did not speak about the actual families in their mission, in their communities that they were helping. Two notable exceptions, in my opinion. The first was St. Vincent de Paul, who talked specifically about the families that they were reaching out to and loaning money to, the families that get caught in this cycle that was described by the speaker. And the second was the financial institution that stepped up to the plate to really discuss the issue of the poor and access to credit were credit unions. And they are doing four or five very interesting things to connect people to credit. It starts with kids. It starts with families. It starts with very small loans. It starts with one-on-one kinds of contacts to connect people to credit, to help them understand what interest does to you, to help them understand that the real freedom is the freedom of saving money. But both of those instances, to me, were a drop in the bucket. I listened to a pastor about a month ago, John Perkins, from John Perkins Ministry in Jackson, Mississippi. He made the point that if every congregation, every Christian congregation, that is, in the United States, would adopt one so-called poor family, and not just give them a loan, not just connect them to credit, not just help them with a job, but really see them through a full year of pulling themselves out. One congregation and one family, poor families as we define them in this country, would not exist. So I don't know if this legislative body can address this, but certainly our society must address this problem from both ends, and we're trying to do it from the legislative end. I'm urging us to think about the fact that we will not solve the problem with this bill. In fact, where will that percentage of those individuals taking those loans go? Will they go to the internet? Will they bounce checks? Insufficient funds will end up costing them more in fees than they pay under current loan rates. Will they go to loan sharks? I'm just certain that that won't just solve the problem. So let us at least examine this problem from both ends. The regulatory that these bills have hammered away at, but more importantly, reaching out to individual families who need help and who need to be connected to credit. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
True, as mentioned earlier, Oregon did deregulate interest rates in 1981. Unfortunately, many of you in this room don't understand or live through and know why that was done. They, fortunately, recognized the importance of competition among the various types of lenders that was the best way to keep interest rates low for consumers. If you didn't live through prime at 21%, you don't have a clue what that means. Mr. Speaker, in all due respect, you don't have to worry about those 19 payday lenders in the 2-mile stretch. They're packing up and going, leaving the state of Oregon that they paid taxes in. You don't have to worry about them anymore. They're gone, or soon will be. House Bill 2202, 03, 04, and 05 took care of that. They're gone. The need hasn't stopped. It's been transferred. Under ORS 725, banks, credit unions, and other consumer finance companies are exempt. They don't have to worry about it. Need isn't gone. And the people that need these and use these will continue to have to go someplace. They just won't have the outlet to go. So in all fairness to the good representative from the Emerald Empire, we don't all agree. We're not united, and we're not unanimous. It isn't the correct thing to do. It is absolutely the most incorrect thing to do if you know anything about the finance world. I suggest to you that you rethink this and stop the nonsense that we created in the special session. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Brune.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the carrier from the Emerald Empire.
Question of the representative. Question of Representative Holvey. Does the representative yield to a question?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Can you describe how the committee came up with 36% as opposed to any other percentage rate, higher or lower?
Madam Speaker, and thank you for that. Question for the representative from West Lynn. We asked the Department of Consumer Business Services to look around the nation, and we looked at caps and rates charged by other states, and we also considered the cap that was put on that I mentioned in my earlier testimony that the U.S. government has for military families.
Follow up, Madam Speaker.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Representative. So if I understand you, that seems to be the norm right now for other states that have adopted similar standards as well as the military. I'm wondering if there was any discussion in the committee establishing that parameter. Was there any discussion of how these states or how the federal government with the military loans, how they came up with that 36%?
Madam Speaker, to the good representative from Westland again, no, we really didn't discuss, you know, how they came up with their rates. We just looked at rates around the country and basically where industries were still surviving, still operating, and we just looked at it from that perspective. We didn't really look at the methodology that they determined that rate, no.
Okay. Thank you. Another follow-up, Madam Speaker?
Additional question? Will the representative yield?
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Was there any discussion in committee regarding a different way to cap the interest rate? Rather than the 36%, was there a discussion or consideration of amendment that would have tied it to cost of capital? And just to clarify my point to that, instead of 36%, say whatever prime is, I think it's 6%, it may be off, but say the prime rate plus 30%. So as the prime rate, the cost of capital went up or down, it would shift. Was there any consideration or consideration of amendment to that aspect?
Again, Madam Speaker, and a good representative from West Lynn, it's a very good question, and the issue was raised. It did come up, but in committee, we actually didn't pursue that topic too much. We did speak of it though, and we looked at 36% and considered if rates kept going up. You know, if people were borrowing at rates above 36%, we felt that really would present a problem for people to be able to pay back at such high rates. And so when rates got that high, it just seemed like, you know, that circumstance became, even if the cost of capital would go up, that became a predatory lending rate in essence that really put people in that vicious cycle of debt that they couldn't get out of. So we pretty much came to the policy decision that 36% would be a good rate.
Thank you, Representative. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the representative's answer to those questions, and I also appreciate what's trying to be accomplished in this particular House bill. I think this body was on the right track, honestly, when we passed legislation that restricted the rates on title loans and payday loans, because there was no question in my mind that the examples that we were hearing both in committees as well as wider across the state were definite examples of usury, and I think we need to stand against usury. As was mentioned earlier, we're talking about consumer loans here, and I hope none of us confuse standard consumer loans that have been around forever. They're completely respectable, completely legitimate. I hope none of us are confusing those sorts of consumer loans with payday loans and title loans. They are apples and oranges. They are not the same thing. And my concern about this bill, it's not a fatal flaw, but my concern about this bill is that it picks 36%, maybe arbitrarily, maybe not arbitrarily. I would say maybe 36% is the perfect rate. I don't know if it is. It may be, and let's, for sake of argument, let's say 36% is the perfect rate at which to cap consumer loans. My worry is, though, that the real world, the real market, isn't always going to adhere to that 36%. What I mean by that is the cost of capital that these legitimate tax-paying consumer loan companies have to pay goes up and down with the cost of capital that none of us in this chamber, nor frankly anybody in the United States or the world, has the ability to control, with the slight exception of the Federal Reserve. So my worry is, if 36% is perfect on May 3rd, 2007, Madam Speaker, is it correct on May 3rd, 2008 or May 3rd, 2009? What if the costs of capital go up significantly, but we've arbitrarily capped this at 36%? We could put these companies in real danger of just not being able to do business because their cost to do business has changed dramatically, yet they can't reflect that in their rates. What if interest rates fall through the floor, Madam Speaker, then maybe this 36% becomes usury, even though we've capped it at 36%. So 36% might be the right rate, but it with a simple amendment, a simple fix, hopefully if it passes out of this chamber, it will happen in the Senate, it needs to be something tied to the cost of capital. And if the prime rate today is 6%, I don't know that it is, I'm just taking that as an example, then an amendment needs to say that the cost of consumer loans and all these other loans shall be no higher than the prime rate of interest plus 30%, which would lock into that 36% today. I think that's the only way that this makes sense. This is well-intentioned. It can be fixed. It didn't get fixed in committee, so, Madam Speaker, I'm hopeful that it will get fixed in the Senate. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
And, Madam Speaker, I request unanimous consent to use a visual aid.
Representative Smith requests unanimous consent to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Seeing none, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I stand up today to speak on House Bill 2871, not in support, not in opposition. I don't know if the folks we're talking about are predators. I don't know if they're Samaritans. Don't know. What I want to do, though, is I want to just ask you a question. $5. Wish I had 50 or 100, but this is all my wife gave me for lunch money. So, $5. Someone walks through your door, comes to your business, comes to your house. You've never met the person before. You don't know their character. You don't know if they're a Boy Scout leader. You don't know if they're an escaped convict. Never met them before. You don't know if they're a predator. You don't know if they're a Samaritan. You don't know what their credit is until you check. And then you find out that this person who's in your business, who's at your front door, has pretty lousy credit. Maybe has a bankruptcy. Maybe a bankruptcy because of divorce. Maybe a bankruptcy because of the most horrendous circumstances that could be imagined. That does occur. That does occur in our society. Maybe the person has multiple public records. Maybe the person has multiple outstanding obligations. You see this on their credit report. It's a factual document. This person at your door, in your business, says, I'd like to borrow your $5. Maybe it's 50, maybe it's 100, maybe it's 500. You don't know who they are. Credit's a little questionable, maybe a lot questionable. You ask them, do you have any collateral? Nope, don't have any collateral. Matter of fact, the property I do own, I don't own. Somebody else owns it because I owe money on it. Just went out and bought a new car, snazzy car, owed $30,000 on it, got to make my payments on that, have my rent. Fact is, folks, when all is said and done, we're going to pay our rent, we're going to pay our food, we're going to pay our utilities first. This person at your door, in your business, maybe doesn't have a job. Maybe doesn't have any cash flowing in. Needs that $5 in the worst possible way. They don't have any money coming in. You talk to the person, you say, do you have any cash yourself? No. You need my $5. Is there any way to contribute to the $5? No. Colleagues, I ask you, someone came to your business and said, I'd like $50, I'd like $100. You don't know who I am. My credit is unestablished or blemished. I have absolutely no collateral. My cash flow is very questionable.
and I can't contribute to what I'm asking you to contribute to me. Now, in banking and in finance, that's called the five C's of credit. I lend money for a living. I lend a lot of money out for a living. And at the same time, I borrow money for a living. I borrow a lot of money for a living. And it always irks me when I go into that bank and I say, I need some money for this building, need money for this, need money for that, and they will not give me the rate of interest I want. Irks me. Darn it, I deserve prime rate. Prime rate is the very best rate of interest that you can borrow at. That's what IBM, Phil Knight, that's what those folks borrow at. Darn it, I don't get that rate. And you know why? Because my credit, my character, my cash flow, my collateral, and my contribution to my request doesn't merit me getting prime rate.
Representative Kremel yields.
It's wrong. By golly, I should get prime rate. Question I'm going to ask you is, if a stranger came up to you, stranger, said, I want your $5. Would you give me $5? You don't know them. Their credit is unestablished or blemished. They have no collateral. They're not contributing. And perhaps they have no job. What rate of interest would you charge to ensure that you've got your $5 back for taking that risk? Question you ought to all ask yourself. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Colleagues, talk about the top and bottom. The individuals who have accessed these payday loans, these title loans, are on rock bottom. And it's time we help them move up. House Bill 2871A, engrossed, simply addresses the fact that desperate times often call for desperate measures. When you're rock bottom, you need to apply a desperate measure. Consider the 21-year-old student who's putting herself through college, whose mother never made more than $200 a month, and her father is critically injured in a car accident and is in a coma in the hospital for 11 months with no insurance. Well, being the only child who ever finished high school, the burden went to this young lady to pay for this hospitalization so her father could have medical care. She spent the next many years paying $100 a month to pay off the loan for his hospitalization. Consider the young mother who had an accident, destroyed a right leg, had three children, no home, no house, no insurance, no car, no money for medicine. What did she do? She had to find money somewhere. Well, I'm very attuned to this bill because both situations, that was me. And I'm just going to ask everybody today to take a walk in the shoes of all of these people that are facing desperate times. I was so proud when Congress passed and the President signed the Military Lending Act, which will prohibit any lenders from charging a military member on active duty or his or her immediate family more than 36% interest. Goes into effect in October. It's the right thing to do, don't you think? Wasn't it? In an analysis of the impact on predatory lending on the military,
The Department of Defense presented evidence that clearly showed predatory lending was having a negative effect on national security and military readiness. Well, let me tell you, as chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the last session, and being very supportive my entire life, I have heard from many, many of these families and many spouses who've been left behind. What should they do in critical times, in desperate times? The Defense Department estimates that 1 in 5 active duty service members is a payday loan borrower, and that predatory payday lending costs military families over $80 million. And look how we pay them. We don't even have direct medical care. Will cost them over $80 million in abusive fees each year. Since September 11, 2001, nationwide, more than 51% of Army Guard members and 31% of Air Guard members have been activated to meet homeland and overseas demands. Well, I'm so grateful that in this case, our government stepped forward and did something for the military. We now have that same opportunity. Colleagues, 8 out of every 10 seniors in this state support this bill. That's 76% of our seniors. Now, we've talked how the military need it, the seniors need it. Well, what about the families? We have many hardworking families, tragically, relying on short-term payday loans to help provide food, shelter, heat, medicine, and other necessities for their families. We are sensitive to gouging when it comes to gas. Well, what about gouging when it comes to high-interest abusive rates? Universally, nobody needs to be ripped off by abusive lenders who prey on those with limited choices. This bill will be a significant protection.
Representative David Edwards yields.
Thank you, good representative. This bill will give these people significant protection, the abused and the voiceless. What we need to correct is this situation, and we have a direct responsibility. But we talk about what are our top priorities at the state level and in this body, and we say safety comes first, and education, and then the most vulnerable citizens. Well, these children, these seniors, these individuals with disabilities all are vulnerable to these terribly high-priced loans. The high fees and interest rates associated with consumer loans like this, payday and title loans, lead most usually to an inescapable cycle of debt. In fact, many borrowers, and I know I was one of them, end up paying more in interest and fees than the original amount of the loan, requiring them to take out another loan to pay off the first loan. In closing, I just want to say, I don't think there's one person in this body, in this room, who would recommend to their children or their parents that they go to a payday or title loan company when they need money. We don't even like credit cards with 18 and 21% interest. So why would we put our citizens in this state? this state of desperation to have to take on such high interest rates to survive. Hunger, I just want to remind everybody, undermines everything we do. So when you're out of a job and you got three kids, no home, no car, what do you need first? Well, you need food. And when you're living somewhere, maybe you don't have relatives or a brother and sister to rely on. And maybe you as a parent are severely injured. You're going to do whatever it takes to take care of those children. I'm just asking everybody here to give these vulnerable people in this state a good opportunity to take care of these people and not end up in a cycle of debt. Please vote for House Bill 2871.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I wasn't originally planning to speak on this bill, but because of a couple of the comments made by my good colleagues on the Consumer Protection Committee from the San Yam Valley and the land of the many Christmas trees, I think it is, I want to clarify a few of the issues that have to do with this bill. Some of you know that my previous job, I worked at the Federal Trade Commission and the Bureau of Consumer Protection Credit Practices Division, so I may get teased about this, but I actually played with an annual percentage rate calculator when I was considering this bill. And I want to clarify that, yes, this bill does apply to finance companies. It also applies to the payday lenders and the title lenders. But during the committee, we heard some very excellent testimony from a national expert on this issue from the Center for Responsible Lending, who talked about in every state where they regulate payday lenders, what happens is that the payday lenders find a way to get around it. And in only the states where they have an interest rate cap are they successful in really curbing the very predatory practices that we've heard so passionately about today. So what I did and what I want to share with you, with the consumer finance lenders, we gave them a lot of flexibility in this bill. They testified that when we asked, do you currently have loans at 36%? And they said, well, first I said, well, maybe a few, and sometimes they said no. 36%, colleagues, is a really high rate. And let me tell you what they could do under this bill. And in fact, last weekend I was at a church near my district where they were talking about hunger. And when I told them that this bill was coming up with a 36%, it's actually for the consumer finance company's annual percentage rate, they said 36%, that's too high. A $10,000 loan, colleagues, for 3 years, that's a small loan. This only applies to loans under $50,000. A $10,000 loan, the finance company could throw in 2% points, another $600 costs, and an interest rate at 28%. For the $10,000 loan, for 3 years, the monthly payments would be $446 a month. So the total of payments that the consumer would pay back is more than $16,000 on a $10,000 loan. That's permitted under this bill. I'm not saying that that's okay, but colleagues, that's permitted. 36% annual percentage rate is high. It gives the consumer finance companies the flexibility with their fees, because annual percentage rate is the fees and the interest. It's a way of expressing the rate at a number that the consumer can use to shop around and compare different loans. This would be permitted. The annual percentage rate on that is 34%. So, colleagues, there's a lot of flexibility for the finance companies in this bill. It will close the loophole that we heard about from the National Center for Responsible Lending. This happens in other states. They have not been able to close the loophole. We need to do this. I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2871A. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I'd like to speak from the maybe a little different perspective on this issue. I want to appreciate the representative from the District 57 talking about the $5. I want to talk about $5 also. When I came to this world, I came to this world without a penny, nothing. When I came to USA, I came here without a penny, just a couple of books and a clothing and a bag. That was it. Absolutely no penny at all. So naturally, I had to struggle. So someone suggested if I go to the Salvation Army, they might be able to help me. So I went to Salvation Army in Portland area and explained I need some help. And without question, they gave me $5. That's why $5 is so important. And at the time, 4 years ago, $5 was quite a bit of money. So with that, I was able to buy some bread and food. And then also that the representative from the Christmas tree area mentioned the church. So I attended church. Church people gathered together. They called the pound program. Each member bring £1, something, food. Okay, so it's a pounding program. So each member one Sunday brought all the canned food, things like that. It has been quite a bit. So I was able to survive a week or two with $5 and with the poundings, okay? That pounding and still pound my heart. How would you know that? So I know that how difficult it is to survive. So, but at the same time, we need to teach our children the discipline, responsibility, and the values and holding. I think we are lacking in our society. Let me mention that I use Visa card, and then when I use Visa card, without exception, maybe one or two, I always pay back whole amount. Instead of getting trapped Visa card program, I use the system for my advantage. So without paying any interest, I paid all at the same time, and then I became a winner. I hope many citizens of our state don't be trapped by these high payday lenders. They are out there to get you, and we need to teach our people. I'm rising here to support this House Bill 2871. I got more than a few letters and phone calls concerning this bill, asking me to oppose this bill. But 36%, maximum 36%, and plus fees, it could be at almost around 40%. So that's quite a bit. And then this is not good place to be. You know, I just want to mention that when I came here, I told you not a penny in my pocket. We worked as a janitor. Since I didn't have any skill, when I look at the newspaper, I looked at the J section, what's in there, it's a janitor section. And also C section, which is custodian section, which I can do. So I was able to find as a custodian job at the Portland, that the Emmanuel Lutheran Church, and I worked over there as a janitor, and also housing also provided. My wife worked as a Chinese garden restaurant at that time as a waitress. So several years, and we were able to save a lot of money, and we bought the house. We bought the car. You know, this is a great country. I know some people always fall, you know, through the cracks. We need to help them, no question about it. But sometimes, some cases, self-inflicted. Stay away from gambling. Stay away from drinking. Stay away from drug. All of those things, as long as someone has the value, stay away from those things, they can be successful no matter what. So with that, I'm willing to support this bill. This is a good bill. As a matter of fact, 36% to me is still high. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on all this stuff, but I've been reading and learning and listening for 5 years now in this building, and I strongly support this bill. My history, the good speaker and the speaker pro tem and I were on the Business, Labor, Consumer Affairs Committee in 2003, and once again, Madam Speaker came to me and said, would you be on this minority report with us? And I said, of course. It had to do with capping the rate of payday lending. That's the consumer lending. But and it was 60% cap is what we were suggesting back in those days. People dug in, the industry dug in their heels. They said, no, no, no. We don't ever want it to change. And I think they were fairly confident things were never going to change. Well, that mistake is made in this building frequently in a broad rate of broad range of issues, and that is a big mistake. Now you wind the clock forward to current events, and when the payday lending bills passed, one of the industry lobbyists came to me and said, and I pointed out to him, I don't even have $5. You could have had 60%, but instead you dug in your heels and now you're getting 36%. Well, that's a lot of money left on the table for an industry, and I think it was very foolish not to see the problems that were arising, the concerns in this community that have been pointed out by more knowledgeable people than me. If I had been in that business, it would have been easy. 60-36, because the train was leaving the station. Now, I don't know where we get the magic number of 36, but I'm fairly confident, and if I can get my wife to give me $5, I will bet that $5 that in 5 years from now, these industries are still alive and thriving here in the state of Oregon and providing short-term lending to people who need it in dire needs, but they will not be paying exorbitant rates and interest. Thank you very much. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
To the bill?
To the bill.
Madam Speaker, I think this is one of these bills where our time efficiency kind of gets set aside and we debate. And as I listen to this debate, the focus is on percentage points and how people are being taken advantage of, and how there's going to be new and ever more creative ways to do this, and we've got to stop it. But has anybody ever really stopped to say, why do we have such a huge problem today that wasn't nearly this large even 10 years ago? Do you realize that if you get away from all of the discussion and look at what's really going on here, this state government, to a large extent, has created the circumstance that has caused these kinds of loans to flourish. 10 years ago, the state government received only a fraction of the money that it now receives from the lottery. Do you realize that we now in Oregon have folks paying in $12 billion a year into the lottery system so that we can net about $600 million a year in revenue? It was a fraction of that kind of investment 10 years ago into the lottery. And who's buying those tickets? Do you think it's those that are making $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 a year? They're going to go to the bar and start putting the money in? It's the very folks that need the payday loans. And so here we are saying, well, it's okay to have new and ever more creative ways to have expansion in the lottery so that we can fund state government on the backs of those who are mathematically challenged and take the money that they need to pay their milk and expenses in their local and their little household, and then they're short on capital. They don't have the money to get by. So what are they going to do? They've got to go and borrow from the only folks that will lend them, which are those that will take and give them $5 at a high interest rate because they have no credit. And why do they have no credit? Because they make mistakes financially. They don't think clearly about cause and effect. And I've taught my kids this one truism about interest. I say, interest is what wealthy people collect and what poor people pay. And I mean, this is one of the dadisms that I've tried to help them understand. But it's a very real thing. Don't go into debt. Don't pay interest. That's money that's gone. And we have $12 billion of money that's getting spent every year in Oregon on lottery so that we can get $600 million to spend on our programs. That $12 billion is a huge amount of money from the households of the Oregon poor and the needy. And so why aren't we speaking out about that? Because we're talking about a bill that's making money for somebody else. The lottery makes money for us, for the government. And so as long as we're generating money for the government, it's okay to find new and ever more creative ways to expand the lottery so we can collect the money.
Representative, the lottery is not germane to this bill.
This bill focuses on interest rates. This bill focuses on ways to regulate so that we can stop an industry from taking advantage of the poor and the needy. And yet we as a body take advantage of the poor and the needy by financing government with the lottery. Let's be consistent.
And I'll remind the members that comments do need to be germane to this bill. Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I just need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Representative Thatcher declares a potential conflict of interest. Please state your conflict.
Well, my husband's company can make consumer loans, which could involve loans less than $50,000, which this bill pertains to.
Representative Thatcher declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just want to follow up.
To the bill?
To the bill, just follow up with a good representative who brought up an issue that was called down that wasn't germane to this bill. As he pointed to the gallery, students, remember, the borrower is servant to the lender. And we have a bigger problem here than just this bill. And it's been talked about by many people. And one thing is we need to address why we have this problem of people needing to get loans at high, high interest rates because they're in dire straits. But on the flip side of that, any of us here that were going to go into a business, and I was told that the price of my hamburgers downstairs could only be fixed at $2.95 regardless of what happened to the cost of the hamburger that goes into them, I'd have a problem going into that business. So I will be a no vote today, and I hope on the Senate side that there is an amendment to this bill at least tying this interest rate to the cost of capital. If that cost of capital goes down, maybe the interest rate should go down. If that cost of capital goes up, the interest rate should go up. I think we need to be fair to those people who are in this industry that are doing it legitimately, which we have testimony from those in support of this bill that are in it legitimately, as well as those that maybe have been termed by many on this floor as being predators. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing no one else in the queue, I will recognize Representative Lim for a second time.
Thank you very much for giving me the second time. I just forgot to mention one more thing. The $5 we were talking about got a donation from the Salvation Army. I want to make sure that I paid back about more than 200 times, and I will continue to pay back. That's what I want to make sure.
Further discussion? Seeing no one else in the queue, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Representative Smith declares a potential conflict of interest. Please state your conflict.
Madam Speaker, I have a significant financial interest in a company that lends money and potentially could be affected by House Bill 2871A.
Representative Greg Smith declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also wish to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
Potential conflict in that I may also be involved on the Oregon-Idaho border with a similar business that Representative Smith is on the Oregon-Washington border, and that is lending with fees that could exceed what are required in this bill.
Representative Butler declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Merkley, do you wish to close?
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I do. Colleagues, I appreciate the very thoughtful debate that's been held on this issue. We have competing values in our society, competing values of a free market, and competing values of protecting consumers. And these have to be weighed carefully and thoughtfully, as we are doing here today. A lot of people worked very hard to put this bill together, and I do want to compliment Chair from the Emerald Empire, who led more than a dozen meetings to try to make sure that the details in this bill meshed carefully with the details in the previous bills that affected lending under 60 days. Corey Streisinger also was very, very immersed in this. And the chief sponsor, Jackie Dingfelder, the chief sponsor from Northeast Portland, has worked on this for many, many years and contributed greatly, as did many others. People have raised a number of good points, and I think it is worth addressing some of them. The first question was, are there documented cases of over 36% in consumer lending? I've been told both by a consumer lender and by representing the consumer lenders that yes, indeed, those rates can exceed that. There's also a court case from back east that showed that the average rate on consumer lending could well exceed the 36% we're talking about in that particular state. We don't have that direct documentation here in Oregon, since that is confidential information. The good representative from the Christmas Tree District said, where will families go? And we know the answer to this, actually, because there are 34 states that have this kind of cap, and the answer is they go the same place they go now. They go to consumer lenders, they go to payday lenders, they go to title lenders, but the rates are 36%. And so you have, I don't know if you've all ever driven past some of these payday loan places and wondered, where are the customers? Huge amounts of infrastructure, huge amounts of storefronts, and almost nobody inside. But you end up with far fewer storefronts, far less overhead because you don't have 300% interest rates financing those storefronts, but you have the same service provided at a much more reasonable rate. The good representative from Canby says the payday loan companies are leaving anyway, that they are gone. Well, no, they're still here, actually, because even our first bill hasn't gone into effect. But when the companies testified on this, they noted that they would find a way around the bill that we passed last summer. And indeed, they immediately filed for consumer lending licenses. So we are now addressing the issue of how they would get around the bills we passed previously. So if we want them gone, if we want them to leave, then perhaps you would consider this as the way to do it. But let me point out, even in this situation, they won't all leave because many of them will stay and lend at 36%, still a very nice return on one's investment. The good representative also noted that anyone who understands finance will oppose this bill, so I'll just plead guilty to not understanding finance, but I do understand the impact of a 36% rate or 300% rate, and it's a vast world of difference to the family affected. Good representative from West Lynn asked about the cost of capital. It hasn't been mentioned in this debate that one of the ways 36% came to be kind of a number that states considered is that it is twice the national cap on credit unions. Credit unions have an 18% cap, and they do very well. So this allows double that rate. It's a very high rate. It's a very generous rate. It also is the rate that after considerable national investigation, the U.S. legislature adopted to protect our military men and women, and I would say that that gives it a high recommendation. The good representative from the Land and Food and Shelter was concerned about the borrower at your door who might be a convict. I'd say simply, don't let that person in your door. And you know what? Consumer lenders don't let that person in the door either, because consumer lenders are in an industry where they are required in their license to do underwriting. And in fact, even payday loans and title loans have collateral, And so this is not an industry without underwriting, not the consumer industry. If those loans over 60%, 60 days under that license due to underwriting, and even the loans under 60 days in payday and title have collateral. Well, colleagues, many groups have labored tirelessly to bring this bill to you. Senior groups, because they see the impact on seniors. Religious groups, because great religious figures have talked about the destructive nature of usury from many, many different traditions in the world. Some have talked in this floor about the good book, and you will find much in that book to address this issue. We've heard from hunger relief advocates because they see the impact on the people they work. We've heard consumer rights advocates because they see the damage done to Oregon's families and communities. All these groups come from very different walks of life, but what they have in common is they understand, because they work with people, they understand, they see that triple-digit interest rates are inflicting great harm on our families and communities. You know, some can consider this bill to be very complicated. It's rather lengthy. There's a lot of interplay between it and earlier legislation. But it simply comes down to this. With earlier legislation, we ended triple-digit interest rate on loans of less than 60 days. With this legislation, we are ending triple-digit interest rates on loans of more than 60 days. That's really all there is to it. Now, if you think that there is the possibility that a 300% loan does a lot of damage if it's a 30-day or a 60-day loan, think of how much more damage that does on a 3-month or a 12-month loan. And that's why this piece of legislation is so critical. And make no mistake about it, the payday and title lenders are not leaving. They were looking and preparing to go into the 60-day and up market. It is what they've done everywhere else in Pennsylvania. They changed their model from short fixed-term loans to charging high monthly access fees for lines of credit. In Illinois, payday lenders simply extended the term of their loans to bypass the lending restrictions. They've changed it to 140 days. But they maintain their 300% interest rates. In Texas, a group simply said, we will charge the same fees and the same rates, but we will do it by setting up bogus brokers who will charge those fees. And that loophole, too, has been closed in this bill. And the firms that did this sort of thing are the firms that have operated across America. They are Cottonwood and the Cash Store and Advance America and AmeriCash. Big firms, lots of lawyers studying every possible way to do this, and one of them testified before the committee, we will find a way around this bill when we pass the bill last summer. So if anyone thinks that those same companies, those same triple-digit lenders, are not going to bring these similar practices here, then I ask you to consider one more fact, which is right after we passed that legislation a year ago, those companies, dozens and dozens of those companies, took out consumer lending licenses. I think that probably clarifies exactly what they intended. I do want to draw your attention to a letter you have on your floor from one of Oregon's consumer lenders, Oregon Finance. It's been mentioned that consumer finance companies find it offensive to have legislation that caps rates. Well, I can tell you what Mr. Parker said to me. He said, it's offensive to me that people associate us with our honest and fair practices with the practices of triple-digit lending, with payday loans, and with title lending loans, that we are a long-standing company that provides an important service, and we can live with the program that you are laying forward. And he asked for three things. He said, this would work a lot better if we went from 36% simple interest to 36% APR. And what that means, colleagues, is you can do higher fees up front and charge lower interest, or you can do lower fees up front and charge higher interest. The entire cost of the loan is taken into consideration. So the committee, under the good representative from Emerald Valley's leadership, changed this to a 36% APR structure. And Mr. Parker asked for a second thing. He said, we need to make it absolutely clear that we can charge, contracted, and collect back-end fees. And I'm talking prepayment fees, non-sufficient fund fees, late payment fees. And would you please clarify in this bill that we can pursue and make sure we get paid, because if we don't, we have to charge the loss onto everybody else who borrows money, and that's an upward vicious cycle. And so the committee took that under consideration, and they clarified that. And the third thing that he asked for, he said, please restructure how this bill is written so that the consumer, the reference to consumer lending will refer to the 60 days and up mainstream market, not to this 60 days and down that has been dominated by title lenders and payday lenders. And that was done as well.
Representative, your time is up.
So thank you. Good bill. Do pass.
Representative Scott, did you wish, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest. I have a consumer lending business that I rent space to in one of the buildings I own.
Representative Scott declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted for the record. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Hunt, how do you vote? Votes aye. And all members have voted. House Bill 2871A. Representative Kremel, you're in the queue. For what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I inadvertently pressed the wrong button. I meant to vote no.
Representative Kremel changes his vote from aye to no. Anyone else seeking to be recognized? House Bill 2871A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3013, relating to incorporation of city.
Representative David Edwards, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative David Edwards requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to direct your attention to the side aisle. One of my longtime interns, Bill Gale, who hails from Anchorage, Alaska. This is his final day here in the Capitol. I just want to thank him publicly for his service on my behalf. Appreciate a wave and the extension of courtesies.
Courtesies are extended. Further courtesies, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also would like to extend a welcome to some 35 fourth graders that are up in the gallery from King Elementary School in Oregon City. And Karen Westerman is the leader and the instructor with the group. So thank you very much for coming. Enjoy your day.
Welcome to the Capitol. Enjoy your day. Further courtesies, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Along with the Keene Elementary students are some fourth grade students from Raleigh Park Elementary School in Portland. Ms. Corey and Mr. Ecker are with them. I'd like to welcome them to the Capitol. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to extend courtesies to our friend, former Representative Gary Hansen. He's up in the gallery smiling. We'll give him all a nice wave.
Courtesies are extended. Welcome back. Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3013. Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, let me tell you a fable. It's a tale by the legendary Greek storyteller Aesop, and it's called The Fox and the Grapes. It's about a fox who reaches up as high as he can to grab some grapes hanging on a vine. But he just can't quite get to them. And the fox retreats and says, "The grapes are sour anyway." The moral, according to Aesop, is it's easy to despise that which you cannot get. In modern times, we call the fox a sore loser. For our purposes today, the fox is a city in Washington County, and the grapes represent the unincorporated properties around that city. And this area is in my legislative district. Many of you know the battle for control of Bull Mountain and that it has been going on for several years. In last legislative session, we passed a bill to require a double majority vote in annexation disputes like the one we've seen on Bull Mountain. In 2004, 8,000 or so residents in the unincorporated portion of the mountain voted 9-1 to reject annexation to the city of Tigard. After that, the city continued piecemeal annexation. Then last year, a group of residents on the mountain, actually their CPO, got together, raised some money, conducted a feasibility study to see what it would cost if they formed their own city, and filed an incorporation, a petition for incorporation. A couple of months later, when Washington County was finishing the process of establishing the proposed boundaries for this new city and putting the issue on the November ballot, the city swooped in and asked the county to carve out 61 acres inside the boundary of this new proposed city. I asked Legislative Council if they could do this. And what they said was that this is a gray area of the law, but if you're looking at for who is first in line, first in time, the case law would favor the petitioners of the new city. Tigard continued the process to annex 35 of those 61 acres inside the proposed city of Bull Mountain, and the incorporation failed by a very narrow margin on the ballot. What this would have done is changed the parameters of the feasibility study. So House Bill 3013 calls for fair play. It basically says once a petition is filed with the county to incorporate a new city, it's hands off for neighboring cities. They have to wait until an election is held for the incorporation measure or get the courts to rule in their favor before they can annex any land that might be part of the new city. Again, this is a matter of fairness. The people who organized to work on this incorporation effort spent hundreds of hours all on the paperwork and legwork, not to mention the expense, just to do the feasibility study and the lawyer's fees. They spent around $100,000 of their own money. After that, there are thousands more that go into paying for county staff time to analyze the documents and so much more that I won't go into at this point. I think voters have a right to weigh in on a proposal whether or not they should be governed by a new city. You can't really do that if the city next door is nibbling away at the boundary with annexations and throwing off all of the estimates for the tax base, service levels, and other items. It only takes a couple of months from the time that the issue is put on the ballot until the actual vote. And if an adjacent city is really serious about annexing land inside a territory scheduled for an incorporation vote, what's wrong with having them wait a couple of more months? Some of you might be thinking, well, there he goes again. Rummel's protecting his constituents on Bull Mountain. You're right. I am. But the possibility of this happening in other parts of the state is very real. And I don't want to see this happen in a community near you. I'm hoping to avoid these types of problems in the future with House Bill 3013. I'm hoping that we can keep fairness, bring back fairness to the process, and allow for a fair vote the next time the citizens of an area want to incorporate into a new city. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel, do you wish to close?
momentarily, Madam Speaker. I would like to thank the annexation work group that has worked on annexation over the past couple of months as part of the Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and particularly Representatives Roblin, Boquist, Clem, Greenlick, and Chris Edwards. I'd also like to thank the League of Oregon Cities and the League of Oregon Counties, and most of all, the Friends of Bull Mountain, and Oregon citizens for a voice in annexation. They have met over the past few weeks and put together a package of annexation legislation that certainly deserves our support, and I do urge an aye vote on House Bill 3013. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Shields has voted. Representative Merkley, how do you vote? Representative Merkley, off the floor. House Bill 30. Representative Merkley is excused for business of the House, and House Bill 3013, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3067, related to allocations to counties and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3067A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3067 was amended and unanimously approved in the House Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee. This bill directs the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services and DHS to use the most current population data available when it uses the complex formula on which state grants to counties for mental health and addiction services are based. Population is already one factor in this formula, but only one factor. The Kessler's formula was developed as a compromise by local mental health and addiction service directors from big and small counties alike. In the formula, less populous counties receive a funding floor. So House Bill 3067 does not take away from those counties. House Bill 3067 simply asks the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services to use the most recent population data from Portland State University's Population Research Center when it applies the consensus funding formula. Bob Nickel of Mental Health and Addiction Services and his staff worked the bill with proponents, and the agency has given its blessing to this bill. Supporters of this bill include the Association of Community Mental Health Programs and the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. Please join me and these organizations in supporting House Bill 3067.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Brune, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3067A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3377, relating to dismantlers.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3377A. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Speaker. House Bill 3377A allows for expanded options in disciplining those in the vehicle dismantling business that are found to be in violation of state requirements. Those requirements primarily include obtaining proper ownership documents on a vehicle before dismantling, destroying the registration plate, and reporting the vehicle destroyed to the Department of Transportation. Currently, the only option available to the department for addressing violations is to revoke, cancel, or suspend a dismantler certificate and or identification cards of employees. The industry requested the department consider a range of sanctions, including probation. This bill provides that flexibility by allowing the department to promulgate rules establishing a range of appropriate sanctions. It further requires that the vehicle title or other ownership documents be submitted to the Department of Transportation within 30 days of acquisition of the vehicle for dismantling. House Bill 3377A comes to you with a unanimous recommendation from the Transportation Committee, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer, do you wish to close?
No.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative McPherson. Representative McPherson votes aye. Representative Nelson, you're in the queue. For what purpose do you rise?
Yes, ma'am. I couldn't distinguish between red and green for a moment.
It should be green.
Yes.
Representative Nelson changes her vote from nay to aye. And House Bill 3377A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3379, relating to criminal possession of property.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3379A. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3379A comes to you from the House Committee on Transportation. Did you know that car rental companies rent vehicles? That's what they do. As part of their very rental agreement, no matter what the size, make, or model of the vehicle, there exists a provision that the vehicle be returned as agreed to by the company and the renter as outlined in the rental contract. In some cases, people choose not to return their vehicle, and quite often these people use the vehicle to commit crimes, which place the general public in harm's way. These are the people that House Bill 3379A addresses. Current statute requires delivery of a written demand for overdue rental vehicle sent by USPS certified mail, followed by a 10 business day waiting period. This provides those that want to cause mischief with the rental vehicle with approximately a 2-week period to do so. During this time, the police are not aware of the unauthorized use of the rental vehicle and have no reason to be looking for it. In some cases, the police may want to list the vehicle on the hot sheet due to criminal activity, but are unable to do so until the 10-day waiting period is up. What House Bill 3379 does is, Currently, a rental car company cannot notify police that a vehicle has not been returned until after a letter of demand has been sent and a 10-day waiting period has occurred. This bill still requires the letter of demand, but shortens that 10-day waiting period to 3 days, and for efficiency allows the rental car company to use an overnight delivery service to send the letter of demand. The shortened time period allows the rental car companies to report the non-returned rental vehicle as stolen in a more timely manner and also allows the police a quicker turnaround period on the vehicles that are used in a crime. This shortens the timeline for the unauthorized user of the vehicle to cause mischief with the non-returned motor vehicle, which will reduce harm to public and their safety. Colleagues, House Bill 3379 is a good bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do, Madam Speaker.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I was looking in my bill file for a fiscal impact statement, and so I just wanted to see what, since we are in increasing criminal penalties, that is the potential that people would become subject to a Class C felony penalties, it would seem like it would have some impact on our incarceration system.
Thank you to the good speaker, to the good colleague from Lake Oswego. This was an issue that we addressed in our committee, and right now the issue we're talking about is already a Class C felony. All we're doing is we're shortening the period that a rental car company can advance on the issue from 10 days to 3 days.
Further question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative, for yielding the question. So does that mean that it has been analyzed in Ways and Means and concluded that there is no fiscal impact, or is it a sort of policy determination that it looks like it wouldn't have any impact because it relates to that time differential?
Thank you. To the good representative from Lake Oswego, I believe our chair has looked into this issue and has found that there's a minimal expenditure impact given to us by the Legislative Fiscal Office. Now, I do not know why it did not go to Ways and Means, other than that was a decision of the chair.
Madam Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, one of the surprised to see this bill come up from the Transportation Committee, and I have to confess other matters have been occupying my time, and so I hadn't focused until we were here on the floor today. But it is sort of symptomatic of a problem, a challenge we have with our criminal justice system, which is that people who have commercial problems tend to use the criminal justice system and want to use our criminal penalties to try to deal with what are oftentimes business problems. And the failure of people to return rental equipment on time is largely a commercial problem. And this bill, I realize, is just shortening the length of time before it becomes a criminal act, but that seems troublesome to me. And it's the kind of bill that I think ought to be reviewed within the Judiciary Committee, where a lot of us have been tried to be very rational about how we use the very expensive resources that our criminal justice system consumes. And so I'm going to be a no on the bill today, because I think that this should go through a process that considers whether it's an appropriate use of our criminal justice system, even when the change being made, and I understand it, is a fairly minor change from a 10-day to a 3-day period before it becomes a criminal act, but I think it needs consideration in that other context. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and my apologies to the good representative. I do not have a question, but I just wanted to let it be known that I too will be voting no on this, just to send a message to the Senate that they might want to take another fine-tooth comb through the bill. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
Just very quickly, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3379 has received a thorough review. The chair of the Transportation Committee has assured that each and every one of us have had an opportunity to ask good and thoughtful questions. I compliment the chair on bringing House Bill 3379 forward, and I'd ask that we advance this bill.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 3379A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill. Representative Tomei, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to return to courtesies just for a minute, please.
Representative Tomei requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to extend courtesies this morning to the young women and girls from Girls, Inc., a nonprofit youth organization dedicated to inspiring all girls to be strong, smart, and bold. With roots dating to 1864, Girls, Inc. has provided vital educational programs to millions of American girls, particularly those in high-risk, underserved areas. Today, innovative programs help girls confront subtle society messages about their value and potential and prepare them to lead successful, independent, and fulfilling lives. Welcome to the Capitol. These folks are in the back gallery. Let's give them a good wave. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Welcome to the Capitol and enjoy your day here. We're very glad you're here. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3486 relating to diabetes and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3486A. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 3486 comes unanimously from the House Health Care Committee. This bill asks the Department of Human Services to develop a focused strategic plan to slow both the rate of diabetes and reduce the mortality of diabetes in Oregon. House Bill 3486 does not reinvent the wheel, but instead asks the department to build upon its work and the work of others, including the Oregon Diabetes Coalition, the American Diabetes Association, and the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, to focus and accelerate strategies to combat the growing epidemic of diabetes in Oregon. 3486 would require a plan that addresses environmental factors, physical fitness and eating habits, preventative strategies, at-risk and cultural analysis, and diabetes self-management, among other areas. This strategic plan would be designed to slow the rate of diabetes caused by obesity and other factors by 2010 and reduce the mortality of diabetes measurably by 2015. Colleagues, the humane reason to pass 3486 is because diabetes kills. The fiduciarily responsible reason to pass 3486 is because diabetes costs. And in fact, chronic diabetes care is the most expensive element of the public health care dollar in Oregon. If we are serious about saving money, managing the public health care budgets, and tackling diabetes, then we should pass House Bill 3486. Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I ask for your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Bruin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Merkley, how do you vote? Merkley votes aye. House Bill 3486A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3524 relating to mental health database and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3524A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, colleagues. House Bill 3524 comes to you from the Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee, where it passed unanimously. But what I need to do is kind of give you a little bit of background to how we got to where we're at today with this bill. During the 2006 interim, while I was assigned to as the vice chair of the House Judiciary Committee, we received testimony concerning the issue of individuals who were suffering from mental health issues. And that testimony provided and revealed that Oregon jails and prisons have become a default mental health treatment center throughout the state. And as a result of that, it brought back a lot of memories to me from when I used to work the road. Because of the nature of possibly the crime that had been committed by an individual that was suffering from mental health issues. Something, for the example, like second-degree criminal trespass or, at this point now, third-degree theft. That both those crimes being such on a minor scale, we weren't in a position in law enforcement to do anything with this person for really trying to figure out where to place him other than possibly take him to the local correctional facility for the jail. Well, what this bill does, and having talked with a number of folks, including the Sheriff's Association and mental health treatment folks, is that the idea and the concept was originally to create a database through the law enforcement data system, LEDS, that when an officer has contact with an individual like this, they would be able to inquire through LEDS to determine if, in fact, this individual has a mental illness issue. And through that, originally what we were wanting to do with this bill was to identify the name, the date of birth, the address, a physician, a contact person, rather than transporting that person, lodging them in jail for an offense, to call somebody and have them come and get them, or maybe even transport them to that individual. It would have saved, you know, felt that it would save a lot of issues for law enforcement out there, as well as being an alert issue for information to the officer themselves. The original bill was going to be voluntary. On March 29th, my committee went down to Albany. We listened to 2 hours of testimony. Upon conclusion of that, it was obvious that we needed to kind of regroup and listen and have a work task force regarding this issue, because there was a lot of concerns as well regarding this issue. So that's what you have now with House Bill 3524 as it's written now that you have in front of you, is that in fact it does develop a work task force and involving 13 members to review the matter and then to report back to this body 2 years from now with concepts what to do with this. There is a part within the bill that will be dealt with and clarified a little bit when it gets over to the Senate side, and that's included with identifying 3 additional groups that need to be of the 13 members. That would be NAMI, Oregon Advocacy Center, and Oregon Community of Mental Health. So bottom line on this, we do not need to use the sheriff's facilities to treat mental illness, and I would urge your aye vote on this.
Further discussion, Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
I wanted to take the opportunity to support this bill and really encourage all of us to consider the significant issues that we face when it comes to treating people with mental illness and that interaction with the law enforcement system, with our local jails, and within our state prison system. And to thank the good representative from Albany for his leadership on this issue, which has really been very strong and innovative. I look forward to seeing the work that this task force will bring out and hopefully will bring to us some good policy recommendations for the next legislative session. So to the good representative from Albany, thank you for your excellent leadership on this issue, and I hope that you will all join me in voting yes on this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Burley votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3524A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3530, relating to heritage districts.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3538. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3538 comes to you from the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules with a unanimous vote. It was comes to the legislature from a request by the Southern Oregon Historical Society, backed by the Southern Oregon delegation. I brought a bill forward to perform this task for the society. It basically creates a heritage district that goes along with the cemetery district, with the street lighting district, the sanitation district, on the number of districts that can actually go to the voters and ask for funding for their services. In my haste to move the bill across, I made a mistake with the relating clause that didn't allow us to work the bill as we needed to. My colleague from Medford was kind enough to give up one of his priority bills in order to get this back on track and address the needs of Southern Oregon. I'm greatly appreciative of that. And he will give you a little bit of background on our historical society. In short, this would allow the Southern Oregon Historical Society or any other historical society in the state to create a heritage district in their region for the voters to consider funding for the services that the historical society provides. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, this particular bill, I'm going to give you an example of what happens when counties get involved with cause and effect, and I believe it was Proposition 5, that our historical society was first started in 1948, where we had 25 cents per thousand assessed value on property. They rolled this, and it was going along just fine until such time that the county had the ability to roll this into the general fund. Once it was rolled into the general fund, this organization virtually was non-existent. They took all the money, which is about $3.5 million per year, and rolled it into the general fund of the county, and then worked and got the Historical Society to the point where it received no monies at all. So this would allow them to establish a district via the voters, so the voters and the historical districts themselves would not lose out in the future, that they would be established as a district, so therefore they would have some protection from this in the future. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just to offer my thanks again to my colleague from Medford.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin? Votes aye. House Bill 3538, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Before we take a recess motion, are there any announcements? And an important announcement from the chair. Colleagues, the chair announces that there will be a supplemental third reading list. It will be distributed to the desks shortly and after the recess motion. And we will be taking those bills up when we come back this afternoon. Also, for your scheduling plans, I will let you know that we will be going till 6 o'clock this evening. And please let your staff know that they need to pull the bill folders on those bills that come out on the additional third reading list. Under announcements, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today is a national day of prayer. And I would encourage us all to take a few moments over the noon hour to reflect on the prayers that our nation so dearly needs, as well as this body here at the Oregon State Capitol. Thank you.
Further announcements, Representative Hunt.
Democrats will caucus at high noon. Grab your lunch, 15 minutes.
Further announcements? Recess motion, Representative Jensen, 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Madam Speaker, I move the House stand recess until 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Representative Jensen moves that the House recess until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Without objection, the House is in recess.